Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. He's Keyshawn Johnson. He's Chris Canty. I'm Freddie Coleman on ESPN Radio. The ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers presented by Progressive Insurance. Anytime a guest stops by to hang out with us, they're here thanks to the Goodyear Hotline. So, Cowboys haters, let the Cowboys fans have it. Let the Cowboys players have it. They had their chances, even though they were behind the eight ball all night long versus the Las Vegas Raiders, but they lose in overtime last night by a count of 36-33. Three out of their last four games they have lost, including back-to-back games against AFC West opponents, Kansas City on Sunday, and then the Las Vegas Raiders on Thursday. You guys both understand when it comes to the Raiders and that organization, how desperate they were to try to get that win, and they played like it. But if you're the Dallas Cowboys, Key, I would have a concern if I'm that team thinking, man, we need to start playing more desperately, especially when we had the kind of defections with players being out because of injury, COVID-19 protocols, et cetera.
No, and I was sitting here thinking as I was talking to you guys in the break, and I was thinking about this segment that we get ready to do on the Cowboys and how things went down for them. And, Chris, you play for the Cowboys, I play for the Cowboys on Thanksgiving mm-hmm. Day. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking to myself as we just finished up our Thanksgiving yesterday, they lost that game. When they went home to eat, you think the food went to waste or did anybody eat it?
Ooh. Oh, man, that turkey tastes terrible yesterday, Key. Come on, man. I played in six Thanksgiving games, and I lost two of them, and I didn't want to be around nobody or nothing. I didn't want to have nothing to eat. Like, it's just you're in a completely different mood, and especially the way the Cowboys played yesterday where they essentially gave the game away at the end of it. Like, yeah, that's got to be extremely frustrating. Ain't nobody enjoyed their Thanksgiving yesterday.
That's what I said. I said, you can't possibly tell me that they went home and enjoyed the meal that was prepared for them by whomever. You just couldn't. You can't eat when you lose a game of a team against a team you know that you should beat despite having certain players out of the game and hobbled teammates like Ezekiel Elliott in the COVID situation with Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb with the concussion. And now Gregory's out and you still don't have DeMarcus Lawrence back. It's just, the secondary didn't play well. It's like they just didn't do themselves any good in that football game to go home and eat anything at all. Damn, not eating. I would have just took the food from them, Freddie.
I want to exactly, man, because they didn't earn it yesterday. And the thing that drives me crazy, Key, is that the Cowboys gave the Raiders more opportunities than they should have had, right? Seven penalties that resulted in first downs for that Raiders offense. And then you had four DPIs by one guy, Anthony Brown, on third down incompletions. That's inexcusable. You can't do that. At some point, you got to stop shooting yourself in the foot. And the Cowboys had so many self-inflicting wounds. Now, I will credit the Raiders because they took advantage of the miscues from the Cowboys, both on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball, and they won the game. But let's not make any mistakes about it, man. The Cowboys let one get away yesterday. In a short week, when you're at home, the Raiders coming from Vegas, like you got to take advantage of that opportunity, and the Cowboys just missed one, and now we're talking about them losing three of their last four games.
Well, number one, it is Thanksgiving, so we're supposed to give thanks and give to those who really need it. So maybe the Cowboys are in that frame of mind when it came to the Las Vegas Raiders needing that victory, especially being in the AFC West. So that could be number one. But number two, I want to stay with you guys in terms of, by the way, he's Keyshawn Johnson, Chris Canyon, Freddie Coleman, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, and ESPN Radio. I want to stay with that whole thing because I never thought about that. When you're playing on Thanksgiving Day, I can't even imagine all the years that the Detroit Lions, when they're not winning, or you guys playing for the Dallas Cowboys and having to go home and eat after losing a game. Key, I'll start with you. What was that like walking into the house? Because I know it had to have been awful for you, but what was it like for your family having to deal with that as well as thinking, man, we are trying to have a good Thanksgiving, but, you know, Dad had a rough day at the office today, and that's not going to work well in the Keyshawn Johnson household.
Well, in terms of Thanksgiving, we would have our Thanksgiving, believe it or not, at the stadium because I had a suite.
Okay.
And we would just have it during the course of the game. So they allowed us and my family to bring in our food from home into the stadium, and they had it all set up. So I never really they were eating throughout the game. I never really had a chance to enjoy the food because if we lost – In any game, no matter where I was at, I couldn't eat. You know, I was a sore loser. I was one of those dudes. No matter if it was Thanksgiving Day, Freddie, or a normal game, it took me 2 days. I couldn't sleep. I was sick as a dog. I just, and then when I win, it's the other way around. But when I would lose a game, everybody already knew, like, he in a bad mood. Like, don't talk. Don't even say that. Don't even be in a bad mood. I guess we ain't going to go eat. I remember that my auntie. One time, my aunt came to the game, and I had my bishop there at the game, and he was upstairs in the box with the whole family. And we were winning, apparently, during the game. But when he arrived, we started losing. And so came after the game. And my auntie, you know, the liquor was flowing. Mm-hmm. So you know how the aunties can get.
Oh, yeah.
She done started going in on the bishop. And I'm like, Lord. No. I'm sitting there. And so when I get there, he's like, your auntie, man, your auntie's killing me right now, Key. I'm like, yeah, I could tell. She's like, oh, this janky, you know what, and blah, blah, blah. I was like, ooh-wee. But that's the sort of stuff that you have to deal with after games. You get, you know, the family already know, Candy, they already know. They like, dad ain't, he ain't, no, nah, we're not going to eat. He want to go home. And we would set things up. So we know when the game is over, we're going to Mr. Child's, or the game is over, we're going to Houston's, or the game is over, we're going to these restaurants. When we lose, they like, well, guess that's out.
Hey, Freddie, I'm just counting as many times as Keith Flex just now when just giving that response. First of all, he had the suite at the stadium, so that's
one.
Big boy bread right there.
Yep.
They let him bring his own food in,
number two.
They never do for anybody.
Right.
Secondly, he's talking about, we might go to Mr. Child's, we might go to Philippe's afterwards.
Number three.
Saying, there are a lot of subtle flexes in there. Keyshawn,
Keyshawn
didn't let you know he got it.
But wait, though, Candy. See, I didn't give you the ultimate flex.
Oh, no.
You want to hear the ultimate?
Yeah, oh, hell yeah, we want to hear it now.
You know, when we lose, you know, they pull my car down to the front, down in the tunnel, and let me drive back up. See, they didn't, you didn't notice that, though, I don't think, Canty.
No, I noticed that. I seen the white Bentley going down there. I noticed it.
I didn't walk out. I pulled my stuff all the way into the stadium.
Yeah, it was your Bentley parked right next to Greg Ellis's Phantom. I remember that. Because I remember I had a little Mitsubishi truck that they told me to keep way in the back of the parking lot. Like, that's what I had. So there's levels to this, Freddie, in case you didn't know. There's levels to this thing. Well,
put it this way. With you two, the Cowboys need to flex like that yesterday. With the kind of flex you guys are giving me right now from previous Thanksgiving Day games. Because that team, and I know Ezekiel Elliott, he may be injured. We don't know how injured he is. I thought a big key, in addition to all those penalties happening, all those Thanksgiving gifts they were giving to the Las Vegas Raiders, playing seven offensive linemen and mixing that around, guys, I'm still trying to figure out what was the end game with the Cowboys doing that to try to help their running game and help their pass protection.
Well, I think the biggest thing, Freddie, is just that the Cowboys' offensive running game hasn't been able to get going the last couple of weeks. Last week, Kellen Moore didn't even give it a chance in Kansas City, where they ran the ball. I mean, they threw the ball three times as much as they ran the ball. And then yesterday, only 20 carries for 64 yards against the 29th-ranked run defense going into that game. That's completely unacceptable. So to me, a lot of that has to be placed at the feet of the play caller in Kellen Moore. Now, I get it. Tyron Smith was banged up coming into that game. Even though he played, it wasn't his best performance, but he was out there. You've got to find a way to be able to reestablish the line of scrimmage. And I think they got away from that early in that game. And the complexion of the game didn't necessarily dictate them doing that, because it was a one-possession game the entirety of the second half. So the Cowboys have got to get back to doing what they do best, which is being able to use that offensive line to assert themselves and to be the catalyst for that offense. And because they've kind of gotten outside or gotten away from their identity, I think that's why we've seen them struggle over the course of the last month in terms of being able to find ways to win.
And another thing you got to realize, too, is the offensive coordinator is what? An ex-quarterback.
Yep.
Typically, ex-quarterbacks, they want to do what? They want to throw the ball in the damn air.
Yeah.
You take a look at the New York Giants situation with Jason Garrett. All you want to do is throw the ball. You don't even want to try to run. And it's the same situation with Kellen Moore. They get in these habits of wanting to throw the ball all the damn time instead of trying to run. Run the ball, please.
Great stuff by Keyshawn Johnson and Chris Canty. By the way, hit him on Twitter, Keyshawn, and at Chris Canty 99, part of Key, Jay, and Max here on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, offering coverage options as unique as your business. Progressive covers companies of many sizes and specialties. Learn more at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Now, Key mentioned Jason Garrett, no longer a member of the New York Giants. The Giants' first game is going to happen with him without him being the offensive coordinator of that team.
Jason Garrett has been relieved of his duties. Tessa in New Jersey.
No, I can't stand that bum, Jason Garrett. However, fire Dave Gettleman. He don't deserve respect like that. Fire him.
Apparently, Tessa in New Jersey was not happy and still not happy with the New York Giants. But Key, gone today when it comes to Jason Garrett, gone this week. But you know there are going to be more heads that are going to be rolling. It could be the head coach, Joe Judge. It could be the general manager, Dave Gettleman. It could be one or the other. It seems like that Dave Gettleman is not going to have his job. The Giants' future that looked pretty promising, according to them, before the season got started. They believed they had their quarterback. They believed they had their coach. They believed they had their general manager. They believed they had that three-headed monster. Now they could be without all three of those guys. This future looks a lot murkier than even before the season, even during this season, has completely been lost for the New York Giants.
Yeah, and you know, more heads are always going to roll. The first domino always falls of a coordinator, right? And then it becomes like an offensive line coach, and then all of a sudden it becomes the head coach. I don't necessarily know that Joe Judge and Chris Canty is a little closer to the New York Giants organization than I am. I'm just looking at it from afar and trusting the history of my mind, telling me that Joe Judge probably gets another shot at it at the end of the day. The new if, in fact, and when they bring in a new general manager will then give the direction of, hey, take a look at your staff. Let's mix some things up. Let me get you the necessary help that you need from a coaching staff standpoint so we can get the best out of the players that are here, because I believe they do have some talent. I don't think that Dave Gettleman missed on everybody. I mean, there's some talent that's there. Guys are in the National Football League. There's only 53 of them, so 53 men on the roster that actually are up playing. So clearly they are at the head of the class at what they can do. I feel like they just need to make some changes on their staff, and that one head that rolled was Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett was mainly brought there to basically tutor and mentor Joe Judge how to be a head coach, you know, just different situations. That's why he was there. And I don't necessarily know that he did a good job or a bad job in terms of that. I know he did a poor job calling plays for damn sure.
Yeah. And another reason why Jason Garrett was brought there was to develop Daniel Jones. And we see that hasn't happened, but Key, I think to your point, the Giants are probably leaning toward retaining Joe Judge, just for the sake of saying that they're not getting into a cycle of hiring and firing coaches every couple of years. Remember, they gave Ben McAdoo 2 years, fired him. They gave Pat Shurmur 2 years, fired him. I don't think they want to do that to a third straight coach, although I would argue, why stay with consistency when it's led to mediocre results? Like, I just don't understand why the Giants want to continue down that path, especially if you want to consider hiring another general manager. Functional organizations typically decide when they're going to fire their GM, when they're bringing in a new GM, allowing him to pick who their head coach is going to be. And based on his 1.5 seasons here, there hasn't been anything that Joe Judge has shown me of substance to say that he deserves the opportunity to be the head coach in 2022. He hadn't earned that just based on the record. Our old coach Bill Parcells used to say, you are what your record says you are. And right now, Joe Judge is a coach that loses twice as much as he wins. Now, you can blame it on Gettleman, but the head coach has got to be responsible for some of that, because you're either coaching it or you're letting it happen. And Key, you said this Giants team is not devoid of talent. The only question is, do you have the right people there to develop said talent? And it doesn't feel like they do.
Well, put it this way. Whatever change is going to happen, whether it involves Joe Judge or not, the Giants are going to be going through some change once the season is over. And speaking of that, we had a chance to hear Keyshawn Johnson say this about one Super Bowl winning coach early in the show that maybe could be in the mix to be a new head coach of the New York Giants.
The offensive side of the ball is dismal for them. No Michael Thomas, no Kamara, tight end gone. A quarterback shouldn't even be in the league as far as I'm concerned. They had an opportunity to fix it when Jameis Winston got hurt, to take a look at Cam Newton that was out there. They passed on that. And I wouldn't be shocked or surprised if, and I know Sean Payton has a big deal, but I wouldn't be surprised if Sean Payton decided to do something different at the end of the season.
Well, Keith, Sean Payton used to work for that organization. We all know his mentor is Bill Parcells, a man that you know very, very well from playing with him with the New York Giants. Could you see Peyton potentially, if the Giants move on from Joe Judge, going to the New York Giants but having full control of personnel matters?
You know, it depends on what he thinks that personnel is going to look like. He's going to go into a winning situation. Does he believe in Daniel Jones? Is that the right fit? You know, a lot of times coaches make these decisions. You know, their kids are older. They're not, you know, Sean's kids a little older now. They're not at home, that sort of thing, where you have to worry about it. Now I could just move around. Mm-hmm. Money-wise, he's making, you know, one of the highest salaries in NFL in New Orleans. But is New Orleans' roster where it's going to be able to compete? And money-wise, do they have the money in the salary cap space to compete against the Rams, against the Green Bay Packers, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, now the New Orleans, the Carolina Panthers with Cam Newton in the future over the next couple years? Because I believe Cam will be there over the next couple years as he continues to grow within Carolina's offense. Are they able to compete with Arizona within that conference? That's what you got to look at. He could be a man in New York. You know, Bill Parcells is obviously his mentor, and Sean in the past, as Dan Graziano spoke about when he was on our show earlier, has flirted with the idea of moving on to other teams. His name pops up every year when big-time jobs openings come up with talented rosters. You know, coaches in this league, you know, they don't sit around and last forever. And I can see where Sean is like, you know what, I've gotten the most out of it. There's no Drew Brees for me anymore. My top receiver hadn't played in 2 years. Alvin Kamara's been in and out of the lineup over the last couple of years for me. I could see where Sean looks at it and probably says, you know what, let me have another challenge on my hands.
All right, Chris Candy, your thoughts on that?
Well, listen, I mean, I think if Sean Payton wants to come and coach your franchise, then outside of a handful of teams, you should absolutely let him. Like, I mean, he's one of the best head coaches and one of the best play callers in the NFL, one of the best football minds in today's game. So, yeah, if the Giants, you know, were in contention to be able to get a Sean Payton type of coach, if they could get Sean Payton, then they absolutely should do it. And keep in mind, the Giants do have 2 first-round draft picks because they did the deal with the Chicago Bears to allow them to get Justin Fields. So, I mean, two first-round draft picks and those being potentially top 10 picks this year, that would be an interesting scenario. But again, it's about what Sean Payton would want to do. But it's clear that the New York Giants have to pivot away from what they've been doing. I mean, they're working on having their 5th consecutive double-digit loss season, and that would make it 7 of the last 8. Freddie, that's not territory that Giants fans are used to them being in.
Yeah,
I mean, that's futility on a whole nother level. We're talking about them being potentially the Factory of Sadness Part 2 at MetLife Stadium. Like, that's where the Giants are getting to right now, so... Yeah. They've got to figure out a way to be able to get things turned around, and I think that starts with the hierarchy of the organization, your general manager, your head coach, and your quarterback. And if I were power ranking the people that were on the hot seat in that organization, it would be in that exact order.
He's Chris Candy, he's Keyshawn Johnson, Freddie Cohen, Keyshawn, J. Will and Max on ESPN Radio. So play along with us here. Dave Gettleman, more than likely is going to be out. They're not going to lack for suitors to take over that organization, whether they decide to go out there Sean Payton or maybe go out there Louis Riddick, one of our co-workers here, because he interviewed for the job the last time and they chose Dave Gettleman. The possibility could be there that the Giants may say, we're not going to let him get away this time if they decide to move on from Dave Gettleman and think about interviewing a guy like Louis Riddick for that job, King.
That would be smart. I mean, it would certainly be smart. Louis Riddick is one of the brightest minds in all of football. I love sitting down just talking ball with him.
Me too.
And when you can sit down and you can talk football and I can be on the same page with you and understand everything you're saying and we see things the same sort of way, I know you know what you're talking about because I sure in the hell think I know what I'm talking about. And he's done a tremendous job on Monday Night Football. There's no question about it. But he wants to be a general manager and the opportunity is there for him. I mean, you know, when they're hiring guys and my former teammate like John Lynch – out there that never, ever been in personnel, came off of television, and he took his team in 2-3 years to the Super Bowl, you can't tell me Louis Riddick can't do that. There's no way in hell you could ever sell me and say, well, Louis Riddick is not capable of being a general manager in the National Football League and turning a franchise around because he knows what he's looking at.
And I'm with you on that one, Key. And to further your point, I think Lewis Riddick should be on a short list of people that the Giants look at should they make the move and get rid of Dave Gettleman. But the thing that I want the Giants to do is just to bring in a fresh set of eyes to be able to fix the situation, because what they've done in the past has just kind of been so incestuous, and it's led to the demise of the organization. Like, they passed it off from Ernie Accorsi to Jerry Reese back to Dave Gettleman because he was a part of those Super Bowl years in 2007 and 2011, and it's just continued to deteriorate. So I feel like they need to bring in a fresh set of eyes, somebody that's not familiar with Giants DNA, quote-unquote, and actually have them assess it and build a football team that's capable of having sustained success.
Daniel Jones, real quick, guys. Key, start with you, then Chris. If you're the New York Giants, what do you do with that guy who has had 29 interceptions in 37 games as starting quarterback?
You know, he's been with two head coaches in 3 years. That's not fair to that young man. We've got to evaluate him and look at it in the offseason with whoever the new offensive coordinator, quarterback coach is going to be. If there's a new general manager, we got to evaluate him. That's just, it's simple, just evaluating.
I agree with Key, although I will say this, 3 years, Coach Parcells used to always say, I give a guy 3 years to show me what he can do, and after that, I'll make a decision. Daniel Jones, 49 total touchdowns, 49 total turnovers. That's a problem in terms of forecasting or projecting his future as an NFL starting quarterback.
Well, Chris, here's something I thought about. Evan and I, the producer, talking about this. Shouldn't that really start now, or have already started a guy in Daniel Jones? Because after 3 years, either you believe he's the guy or it's not the guy. If you're going to be a general manager or coach taking over this team, you got to look at him and say, either we're keeping that guy or we're not keeping that guy. And that's a decision that has to be made before next year.
But it's not.
Well, yeah, because you're also talking about exercising his fifth-year option this coming offseason, whether or not you're going to do that. So that decision has to be made. But you also got to look at the options that you have in the upcoming draft or with quarterbacks that could potentially want out of their current situation, veteran guys around the league. Like, you may not have any other better options right now. So I don't necessarily know where the Giants' head is at, but I think this decision is going to be made by whoever the next general manager is, because it won't be Dave Gettleman.
Yeah, but see, he under my tutelage, I don't know what he is. I can't evaluate. I wasn't there. I wasn't in the building.
Okay.
So three head coaches and now three coordinators in 3 years, I can't evaluate him doing that. I got to see what he is in my tent, in my building, because I don't know what was going on. It's very hard to know what's going on in a young man's mind when Jason Garrett is coaching him. Pat Shermer's coach, it's too much. Now you got Freddie Kitchens. Like, he has not had a Sean Payton, a Todd Haley, Mike Holmgren, Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy. He hasn't had that. So how can we judge his ability based on the mess that he's been under for the last 3 years?
Yeah. Either way, it's a tricky situation in Gotham with the Giants, and not just the rest of the regular season, but a decision that will have to be made in the offseason to try to get that train on some sort of track that's going to be consistent. Great stuff by Keyshawn Johnson and Chris Canty. Hit them on Twitter at Keyshawn and at ChrisCanty99. I'm Freddie Coleman. Hit me on Twitter, Coleman ESPN, part of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio. Sirius XM Channel 80 and your smart speakers. Michigan fans are tired of The Ohio State University. Also not beating said The Ohio State University, and they're also tired of hearing this. That's next.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Along Keyshawn Johnson, Chris Canty, and Freddie Coleman, and Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, as well as TuneIn. The last time Michigan beat Ohio State in football, gas was free in this country. That was back in 2011. They beat Michigan, won it by 40-34. Since then, it's gotten progressively worse and worse, including last year, where Ohio State beat them 56-27. The year before that, they beat Michigan 62-39. Let's bring the man who played in that rivalry for The Ohio State University. He's now ESPN football analyst, and he has Ben Hartsock, and he joins us here on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Ben, I'm not going to ask any kind of expectations when it comes to when these two get together tomorrow. But what has it been like that it seems that every year Michigan fans say next year is going to be the year, and it has not been that way for them since 2010?
Listen, the rivalry only works when it's competitive. So secretly, I've been rooting for Harbaugh. I think he's good for college football. His eccentricities, is you know, interesting way he carries himself, it's good. But this series has been one-sided. It's been a mess. And so I'm so excited that this game, it feels like the games that we're accustomed to. It feels like the way that rivalry games should feel, with this anticipation, with this feeling of the winners going to the Big Ten Championship, the winners got the beeline for the college football playoff. These are the games that I grew up watching. These are the games that I grew up playing in. I've felt the joy of victory. I've felt the crush of defeat. The most painful loss in my entire football career, professional and collegiate, was losing to Michigan my senior year. But the one of the most incredible college football, one of the greatest football experiences I've ever had is winning at home where the fans rushed the field because we were headed. It was pre-Big Ten championship game, but beating Michigan sent us to the national championship game. And having that rush of 100,000 fans on the field beating the crap out of your pads is an experience unlike any other. So it's good to have this game matter this weekend because the college football is better when it does matter.
Do you think that Michigan has a legitimate shot? Want them to have a legitimate shot, but I mean a real shot.
Sure, yeah, they've got a shot because this year, more than maybe the past 5 years, maybe that more than any other year in the college football playoff era, every team has flaws outside of Georgia, but every team has real and legitimate flaws that can be exploited. And Ohio State's defense has quietly clawed back into the top 20, top 15 of scoring defense, but they've looked vulnerable at times. Now, that also feels like a long time ago. Ultimately, whether or not you bet on Michigan, whether or not you think Michigan's got a shot, you've got to kind of speculate, did Ohio State go bonkers last week because Michigan State's defense was really that bad? And with that victory, does that help Ohio State? And say, you know what, we are the juggernaut that we were expected to be all season, and now we figured out? Or does a win like that over a top 10 Michigan State team crushing their dreams lead to a little bit of complacency? I mean, that you've got to kind of project how Ohio State's team will respond. But the recipe to get the win for Michigan State, it's not complicated. You've got to run the ball. You've got to shorten the game. You got to get a couple of interceptions, and you've got to keep it close early. Last game versus Michigan State, Ohio State scored every single time they had the ball in the first half, and they only kicked one field goal. Seven drives in the first half, six touchdowns, one field goal. So you've got to come out, and for Michigan, you've got to come out, and you've got to keep it a battle. You've got to punch and body blow and keep the game close into halftime, and then hope some things bounce your way in the second half.
Talking with ESPN football analyst Ben Hartstock. Ben, in staying with Ohio State, when the rumors surfaced about Matt Nagy, Chicago Bears head coach, potentially being fired this week, Ryan Day's name started popping up as potential candidates to fill that coaching vacancy. What have you heard about Ryan Day potentially wanting to make the leap to the pro ranks? And is that a possibility? Could that potentially be a possibility this offseason?
It's nothing that I've heard in my circle of former players and whatnot that is anything of interest to him. Maybe if Ryan Day had a national championship or two, you know, something that his legacy was cemented at the collegiate level. But I don't think that as much success as he's had, he hasn't really accomplished outside of continuing the greatness that Urban Meyer handed him. I don't think he's written his chapter nearly completely enough. And then on top of that, you have to wonder, there's been a bunch, you know, there's a bunch of college football openings right now, and there's a lot of talk about who I don't know that there's that many men on the planet that have the skill set to do what Nick Saban has done and to do what Dabo Swinney has done and what Ryan Day, we think, is in the midst of doing. So do you look at that requirement, because it's not just about the X's and the O's. It's not just about motivating players. It's about recruiting, and it's not just recruiting high school. It's recruiting guys to not transfer, and it's recruiting guys from the transfer portal, and it's also fundraising, and it's dealing with boosters and all of that. The college game is just it's an unbelievable meat grinder of a job description for the college coach. So maybe there's somebody that, or if you don't want all of that, you go to the NFL, because at least you don't have to deal with the recruiting. At least you don't have to deal with the donor relations, the facilities, and all those sorts of things. But I don't strike – Ryan Day doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that's interested in that. I think at the college level, you're still more of a developmenter. You're growing young men into grown men. So I think that's an attractive part of it for Ryan Day. I don't think that he's necessarily – maybe down the road, but I think we're still 5-6 years away from that being a reality.
Ben Hartsock, ESPN football analyst, on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio. Then they have a team in Cincinnati, the other team in Ohio right now, that's also in the top four when it comes to the college football playoff rankings. They play East Carolina later on. Then they got Houston next week in the American Athletic Conference Championship game. The committee finally did right, if you believe Cincinnati fans, by putting him in the top four. What are your thoughts on this Bearcats team that is in the top four going forward?
It's unprecedented. I'm amazed. I thought the way that the committee placed Cincinnati at sixth initially in their ranking back earlier this month, I thought that was a symbolic gesture, because they were ranked two in the AP poll, and the college football playoff put them at sixth. And to me, that was a signal that, guys, we don't care how good you are, you're never going to do anything to get in this top four. But now here we are. So you're in the driver's seat, and the reality is Ohio State and Michigan is going to clarify to continue to solidify that spot in the top four. I don't think Notre Dame's going to make it make any moves or do anything with the games that it has remaining to be able to jump them. So as long as Cincinnati holds serve, it looks like we're looking to we're going to, you know, make history here and have a group of five team in the college football playoff.
Always does a great job to ESPN football analyst, although he'll never be allowed into the state of Ohio ever again. They're saying he's rooting for Jim Harbaugh. He has Ben Hartsock joining us in the Goodyear Hotline on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. Ben, enjoy the game tomorrow, my friend, and thanks a lot.
Yeah, getting on a plane, bud. Heading that way, fired up. I might fight somebody in the tailgate.
My money's on Ben. I've seen you. My money's on you. You're fighting anybody in the tailgate. Along with Keyshawn Johnson and Chris Candy, I'm Freddie Coleman and Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. It's the NFC East, still the Cowboys' division to win, even though they have a game and a half lead on the Philadelphia Eagles.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's electricebikes.com.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Choices will always be made when it comes to taking a shake. Excuse me, Keyshawn Johnson, Chris Canty, and Freddie Coleman. On Key, J, and Max on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, 6X and Channel 80, as well as TuneIn. Our man Evan Wilner, he brings the scenarios, and we'll make sure if it's going to be on the take or on the shake. Evan, it's all yours.
Yeah, I'm going to add one based on what we were just talking about in the break.
Okay.
USC will win a national championship in college football before Notre Dame wins another one. Take it or shake it.
Take it!
Take it!
That's when you guys are supposed to say take it. I don't think you explained it to him.
Well, take it!
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to take that. I'll shake that one.
I'll shake that one, too.
No, I'm going to take it. One. So the way it goes is when I say take it or shake it, we all scream take it or shake it. Then I explain why I took it or shook it. Then you guys can elaborate after that. So I'm going to take the fact that USC is going to be able to get back to the top of college football very soon when they go out and hire the right coach that will take care of the student athletes both on and off the field academically, as well as getting them necessarily ready to go to the NFL. One of the things about our program that we haven't been able to do is get the type of bodies in here that we need, football players, NFL ready type guys that we had before. Once we get that back going, we're certainly going to win a national championship. Notre Dame is all hype.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Key, but Notre Dame is in the midst of their longest double-digit win streak that they've ever had in program history, and that's a storied program. So Brian Kelly has done a pretty damn good job, and they're trending in the right direction to having opportunities. Like, they're sixth in the college football playoff rankings right now. USC, although geographical footprint would lead you to believe that they have a chance to make this a quick turnaround, I mean, a lot of people in recent memory haven't been able to get it turned around. So I got more confidence in what I've seen from Notre Dame than what I've seen from USC.
Man, stick to Virginia football.
Well, number one.
That ain't a good place to be, Keith. Yeah. I'm just going to put that out there. Exactly. I don't know if we're as bad as SC, but we're still not in a good spot.
Well, you're not in a good spot, but you're not SC in terms of that. I'm shaking it as well, because the only way I would take in this if USC hires Brian Kelly as their head coach.
Oh, no.
Period.
Turn that dude's mic off.
The only way that I would be taking
Brian
that because,
Kelly,
dude,
man, we,
Keyshawn, until you get a head coach that's been there
please,
as long as Brian Kelly and been
please
in the college football playoffs, he's been there twice.
Please.
When has USC been in the college football playoffs,
oh,
dude?
Oh, God, stop, until, Brian Kelly. And I like Brian Kelly. He comes on the show, but please.
Please yourself, man. You need that guy to say, please, USC, hire me.
Oh,
that would be the
God
only way I would take your
never
team.
Never going
being
to
there
happen. Never.
I know it's never going to happen, but for it to happen, for your team to be in the college football playoff, you need to hire that guy more than somebody else.
And do what? Get run out of the building?
Well, at least you'll be in the college football playoff. Where's USC now? You guys can't even go to the now defunct Tangerine Bowl, much less go
wow
to the college football playoff.
Wow.
If we didn't have to move this thing on, I would baptize you right now.
No, go. Let's.
No, wait, look. First of all, we had a guy in Lane Kiffin. We fired him on the tour mat. Why? Mm-hmm. It was silly, given the fact that he took a program over that was lack of scholarships and did a good job with us.
Absolutely.
Then we hired Steve Sarkisian, which they probably should have never hired in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
He was known as 7-win Sark out of Washington. Then we took and we hired Clay Helton when they should have kept Coach O.
Mm-hmm.
But because we had two first-time athletic directors have never done it before in Pat Hayden and then the Hall of Famer Lynn Swann, now we finally got a football guy in Mike Bone to do the job. He was able to hire the right guy in Lou Fickell at Cincinnati. I believe he will be able to hire the right guy along with Carol Folt, our president of school, to get the alumni base going, to have everybody satisfied in the direction in which we go. There's some candidates out there that are pretty good, and
are.
I know who they are,
okay,
and I know who we've been talking to,
okay,
and I'm not going to disclose that.
That's
but
right.
I promise you we'll be back in a national championship game before Notre Dame.
Especially if Mike Bone has Brian Kelly's number on speed dial, that'll be the first step towards that.
Anyway.
Jonathan Taylor will finish in the top three of the NFL MVP voting. Take it or shake it, Keith?
Take it!
Take it!
Yeah, I think he will. It's going to be two quarterbacks in Jonathan Taylor. The two quarterbacks are probably going to be Kyler Murray and Tom Brady. I think that's the two quarterbacks, and then Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, I'm with Key on this one. I think he'll be in the top three. He's going to finish leading the league in scrimmage yards. But if Derrick Henry can't win the MVP, then this dude ain't going to win it. I think the last time a non-quarterback won MVP was 2012, Adrian Peterson. So I'm with Key. I think it'll end up being Tom Brady. And it's crazy to say at age 44 he's going to win MVP. But I think he has to be viewed as the front runner.
Yeah, what you said. Go back to Evan.
Jalen Hurts will be at least the second best quarterback from the entire 2020 draft. That includes Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa. Jalen Hurts will be at least the second best quarterback from that draft. Take it or shake it.
We're talking about the future, right? Not
yes.
This year.
Yeah. Yes, going forward.
Yeah. Shake it.
Shake it.
I think he will be in the eyes of most people, not mine. And I shook it because I think most people will view him based on where he was drafted, his style of play. They will prefer to go with Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, over Jalen Hurts, even though Jalen Hurts' numbers in his first 15 games are basically exactly the same as Lamar Jackson, which says that he was heading on an MVP-type trajectory based on where those statistics were for him and Lamar. I just don't think that people appreciate his abilities, and they will write him off because of that.
Couple of things. Jalen Hurts is not Lamar Jackson, just to clarify. I don't want anybody to think that. But right now, the best thing Jalen Hurts does do is run the football. That being said.
See, here you go. You see what I'm saying? Just writing him off.
I'm not writing him off. I think Jalen Hurts is going to be the franchise quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm not writing him off, Key. But I just don't think he's going to be as good as Justin Herbert or as good as Joe Burrow, because those guys have shown a lot earlier in their career that they're able to consistently win from the well. And when it comes to playing quarterback in the NFL, you're going to have to make some throws from the pocket in order for your team to have success. Jalen Hurts hasn't shown he can do that. Not saying he can't develop into that guy, but I don't think he'll ever be better as a pocket passer than Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert.
You see what I go through, Evan? I go through this all the time.
All right. Real quick, take it or shake it. Last one off that. The Eagles making the playoffs this year. Take it or shake it. Quick answer. Key, Chris.
Take it. Yeah, I don't think they're going to make it.
No.
They're going to make it. Look at their remaining schedule. They're going to make it.
Yeah, I don't trust Nick Sirianni as a head coach yet. Although I trust him a lot more than Dan Campbell of the Detroit Lions. Speaking of that game between the Lions and the Bears, somebody still thinking not to be part of the Great Resignation. We'll tell you who that is next on KJM and ESPN Radio on 6XM Channel 80.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.